Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives. Jim, we start with the good, and it's always fun to see a new poll out that suggests that more and more Americans are coming to the conclusion that we reached, really even before this president took office, about what exactly he's brought to this country in terms of the economy, in terms of his overall performance, in terms of Obamacare, of course. He is now at just 41% in a new Washington Post ABC News poll, just 42% approve of his handling of the economy. We've actually seen worse numbers than that, I believe. 37% approve of how he's handling the implementation of Obamacare, and 34% approve of his handling of the situation involving Ukraine and Russia. So if you look at domestic, international, overall, he's hovering right around 40%. That's going to make a lot of Democrats nervous this year, which is probably good for conservatives.
Greg, there's nothing better than picking up the Washington Post in the morning. The big headline, Obama approval rating at new low. I have a suspicion that's not the last time we're ever going to see that headline. A couple things that jump out of it. First of all, I mean, this is such a gloomy poll for Democrats. We may want to steel ourselves, just as the New York Times had a poll, it was kind of an outlier. It showed Pryor up a bunch in Arkansas and stuff. This may be a bit of an outlier in our direction. It's possible that things aren't quite so bad. The next poll will probably have Obama. Look, Obama's approval rating has been in the low 40s for a while now. So when it hits 41, you're like, man, that's almost in the 30s. That's, you know, late George W. Bush territory. Maybe the next one will have it up a little bit higher. But look, it's generally been pretty meh to not so great to get, you know, to sliding down to, you know, particularly bad. You know, even the good news by comparison back in March was, you know, that he was 46% approved, 50% disapproved. You know, this is not a dramatic change from there. I think the thing that's most intriguing about it is what's driving it is the economy. And that's kind of a particularly, you know, interesting because, you know, there's kind of this perception in Washington that, well, people are upset about Obamacare and all that stuff. But because the economy is creating jobs, albeit part-time jobs, albeit low-paying jobs, that the economy's fixed and prosperity's just around the corner and people aren't all upset about it. And look, Obama got reelected. So the perception was, however bad the economy was, it wasn't bad enough to get people to vote Obama out of there. There was a little bit of an uptick in 2012, not enough, but maybe it was enough to get people to be convinced that it was going to be okay. And now they're not so convinced of that. More than 7 in 10 are describing the economy in negative terms. Just 28% say they think the economy is getting better. 36% say it's getting worse. Look, you know, the country has been in a really deep funk, and it's really, you could argue, it never really came out of it during the Obama years. And they say, look, a good portion of this comes through the partisan view of the economy and things like that. But look, if you're an incumbent, and you know there are quite a few very vulnerable incumbent Democrats who are not protected by the drawing of district lines in those Senate races, you've got a circumstance in which they just can't really point to anything. And maybe they just getting really tired of hearing, oh, it's going to get better, it's going to get better. The souring on Obama means he will not be an effective tool on the campaign trail. Most of these red state Democrats didn't want him to come to their states anyway. But you got to wonder, you know, if everybody's feeling, you know, like ready to give up on Obama. And we discussed yesterday the sense that the more discussion of Hillary, the more discussion of Republicans running in 2016 suggests the country is basically written off Obama as president. They kind of know what they get with this guy. And I think over time, the disappointment becomes clearer and clearer. The good news for us is that the country is now finally seeing the same guy that, you know, we've been seeing all along. The bad news is that it's not a guarantee that Republicans will automatically prosper from this. You got to put forth the better candidates and better options. And that's the mission for them heading into these midterms.
Yeah, certainly the case. And as we mentioned yesterday, Obamacare, for months and really years now, has been the calling card for the GOP in order to pick up seats in the House and the Senate. Just referring back to that ABC poll for just a second, on the generic ballot question, Democrats only up one. They were up five in 2010 when the Republicans picked up 63 seats. So that's looking good on the House side, and we'll see if that translates to the Senate side as well. But on to Obamacare, Kathy McMorris Rodgers, the House Conference Chairwoman, number four Republican in the House, taking a lot of heat from the conservative base for suggesting in comments to a reporter last week that, you know, given the fact that so many people have their health care now through the federal and state exchanges, a full repeal of Obamacare is probably not going to happen, and so we need to work on reforming it. And a lot of people are throwing out the RINO term for her, and you and I were not very happy with it yesterday, considering that's been the Republican promise for years and years now. But now Senator Rand Paul, Tea Party favorite of Kentucky, admitting on Friday, and this is from townhall.com, it's difficult to turn the clock back on Obamacare. In a speech he made to students at Harvard's Institute of Politics, he said, I think it's going to be difficult to turn the clock back. People get assumed and accustomed to receiving things, particularly things they get for free. He also says you can change some things. He, first of all, wants to make Obamacare voluntary and the mandates. You make it voluntary, basically you get rid of the coercion, presumably by eliminating the penalty those without insurance are required to pay, and so on and so forth. So, Jim, I don't know if this is just their way of letting their base down early instead of later, or whether they're going to have to work even harder to distinguish themselves here heading into November.
You know, one of the reasons we on the right righteously objected to Obamacare was that it was this giant, complicated monstrosity that had all kind of elements that were to be decided later. You know, the secretary shall, and giving Sebelius far-reaching powers. A lot of the debate occurred over the mandate, and I think that's actually where most of the discussion has continued. But even things like the expansion of Medicaid, that was kind of, somewhat discussed during the debate, but I don't think it really dominated it. And that's one of the kind of, since the enactment has become one of the real points of contention. Obama says the reason it's not working as well as he wanted is because of all those mean, nasty Republican governors who refuse to expand the, raise the income level. I think we can actually debate whether raising the income level is a good idea. I think the state governors have many very good reasons to be wary about expanding it. But we are a kind and compassionate country, and raising the level takes it from the poverty level to 133% of the poverty level. The folks who would be qualifying are still pretty darn poor by most of our measuring sticks. So we could have that debate. One of the things that I think drives conservatism is this sense of you should not look for big, sweeping, dramatic changes because, then everybody has more change than the system can handle. If we wanted to incrementally change Medicare, we could do that. But I think the simplest and easiest way to do this, considering all the complications and headaches and lost coverage and grief and aggravation that it's caused, repeal it. I mean, push through it. It's obviously never going to happen under Obama, but repeal it. Start with a blank slate again. And if we really think that the subsidies to these 7 million, 8 million, whatever amount of people who now have insurance, who previously didn't have insurance, and can only afford the insurance because of those subsidies, we can have that discussion. I don't know if Republicans are automatically adamantly opposed to subsidizing folks so that they can get insurance. I do think it does add to the expense of this, and I think we'd probably argue about how we have to think about how we're going to pay for this and perhaps make some sort of other entitlement cuts to balance this out. But we can have that. I think Rand Paul is being realistic here. Having said that, I think Republicans should be emphasizing just because we don't necessarily want to eliminate every provision that was enacted under Obamacare doesn't mean we don't repeal it. But this thing was, we don't like these giant pieces of legislation with 40, built like a Rube Goldberg with, all kinds of parts stuffed into it. Start with the blank slate of paper and start from the beginning and design the healthcare system you'd like to have that provides the most coverage for everybody, but also encourages individual responsibility and paying for it for yourself as much as you can.
I would add two other things, both of which happened in 2012. We had a chance to get rid of this in a couple different ways. Number one, the American people had a chance to do it at the ballot box in November of 2012, potentially. They didn't do it. And of course, way to go, Chief Justice Roberts. Way to go. So we knew once 2014 rolled around, rolling this back completely was going to get a lot harder. And Republicans are basically letting us know that that's the case. So good time.
Yeah, you can argue with Rand Paul, this doesn't really charge up the base. It doesn't really inspire people. But, there is more to life than charging up the base and inspiring people. I mean, he's just acknowledging flat out reality that we can't even really begin on this until January 2017. And by that point, certain people will be getting some of the benefits of this law for several years. Now, the good news for us is that we're talking about Obama says, 8.1 million or something like that. First of all, let's see how many keep paying the premiums, right? My suspicion is this number is going to drip down month by month as people realize they either can't afford it. Some of them might get insurance with their employers. In our previous martini, we talked about how lousy the economy was. So in other words, that some X million people will have some benefits that they don't want to give up. Maybe it's worth letting them have it if we can, get rid of the grief and aggravation it's causing for tens of millions of other people. And, that's something we can debate when we get to 2017. It's a little bit, down the road for us to be, going at it tooth and nail now over, the possibility of what we do then.
All right. On to martini number three now. And yesterday, Jim, New York Congressman, Republican, as all the mainstream media outlets like to point out, Michael Grimm turned himself in as prosecutors released a 20-count indictment that alleges he broke all kinds of rules while running a Manhattan restaurant prior to his election to Congress. This is from Chris Saliza over at the Washington Post. Thanks to the 30-page indictment, he writes, Healthalicious has become one of the day's political buzzwords, and he says that is egregious enough. Basically, here are the quick bullet points on what Grimm is accused of doing. He hired a staff of illegal immigrants, first of all, paid his staff in cash under the table, and kept two separate payroll documents, used an AOL email account to run the restaurant while he was campaigning, and he lied about it all under oath in January 2013. This is, of course, the guy who threatened to throw a reporter over the balcony in the Capitol when he was asked about this after the State of the Union address back in January. So not looking good for that seat, and some really bizarre parts to this story.
It's possible that he's not guilty of all of these things. He's entitled to the presumption of innocence. He'll have his day of court. One of the things that does jump out, though, is that once we've seen you losing your cool with a reporter on camera, threatened to throw him over a balcony, all of these other allegations of bad behavior seem a little bit more plausible, right? I mean, it's not, you know, no one's saying, not Congressman Grimm. No, I know the guy. He's the nicest guy. He would never do something like this. There are two issues here. One is the judgment within the courtroom, and the other is the court of public opinion. And I think Grimm already had a bit of a, you know, run-in with public opinion by losing his cool on camera like that. So we'll see. I think you're right. I think this is really a giant albatross if you're running for re-election. You have to say, you know, I'm a candidate of indictments but not convictions. We usually want to say you're a man of convictions. It's, you know, we'll see. I, you know, stranger things have happened. Trafficant kept getting reelected and all that. But, you know, we're going to chances are if you're the NRCC, you're writing that one off and hoping to make a comeback in 2016 or 2018.
Yeah, the indictment came down after the filing deadline. And I saw one reporter on Twitter yesterday explaining there's three ways that Republicans could replace Grimm on the ballot. If he dies, if he moves out of his district, or he gets nominated for a federal judgeship. So let's get right on that one.
Let's So so how's he feeling?
Yeah. Jim, we'll leave it there for today and talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.